Our joint project grew out of a chance meeting in March of 2005 while I was in Missoula, Montana, to open an exhibition called Nature Mort, Images from the Gallery of Unnatural Disasters, that was showing at the Art Museum. Deborah and I were each deeply influenced by the same landscapes and the same rivers from widely different cultural perspectives. Soon after meeting her, I suggested in a hopeful fashion that we might make a book together, and the work I'm about to show you is the result of the 5 years of our collaboration and mutual admiration. These following images are not from the book, but from the book that immediately precedes this book, because it is the occasion on which Deborah and I met. Allow me to quote you the title of this particular piece. I cannot but believe that the time is not distant when those wild forests and trackless plains and untrodden valleys and the unbounded ocean will present one grand scene of continuous improvements, universal enterprise, and unparalleled commerce. When those vast forests shall have disappeared before the hardy pioneer, those extensive plains shall abound with innumerable herds of domestic animals, those fertile valleys shall groan under the immense weight of their abundant products. When those numerous rivers shall teem with countless steamboats, steamships, ships, barks, and brigs, and when the entire country will be everywhere intersected with turnpike roads, railroads, and canals, and when all the vastly numerous and rich resources of that now almost unknown region will be fully and advantageously developed. And to this we may add numerous churches, magnificent edifices, spacious colleges, and stupendous monuments and observatories, all of Grecian architecture. I am quoting Lansford W. Hastings in his exultant travel guide published before the California Gold Rush. The second image from that previous exhibition I refer to in some ways as my emblem book, and the emblem book here is beginning to take shape: dead buffalo, dead rivers, dead Indians. A day in the archives for me, finding these photographs, becomes a study of the natural history of disaster. My perspective on Deborah's Sacagawea grew out of this exhibition. These particular fellows here, on the back of the original, there's a slight, vaguely scrawled pencil on the original, and the pencil scrawl reads, "Half-breed buffalo bone pickers, Dakota Territory, 1888. And if you guys know what the word crowbait means in Montana, and in case you don't, it means worthless crap. And of course, this is where their bones were headed, a bone pile, and those are almost all skulls in Nebraska, on their way to making printer's ink and fertilizer for the plains that they were about to plow up. Both Nature Mort and Sacagawea are part of a larger cycle of Western photo explorations that I began back in 1975 with appropriated images, printed letterpress from old Montana newspaper cuts in the wanted poster style of the American West. Since my first printing experiments in 1974 through to my current work, I have been driven to explore the ideological and manipulative uses of historic images and photographs. And having personally witnessed myself, of course, the beginnings of a prolonged second death of the West from high-speed tourism and severe harvesting technologies, I'm particularly sensitive to the deeply contorted boosterism in the usual stories of the development of the American West, recorded both in the historic record as well as in the popular imagination. To me, the evidence speaks with a harsher tongue. Now to introduce the book. The images, although this is not the image, of course, this is the outer shell. The images that I have chosen to interpret and to amplify the language and the visions of Deborah's Sacagawea are largely drawn from archive photographs depicting the Dakota, Montana, and Idaho frontiers in various stages of evolution and decay. My intention is to give the substance to Sacagawea's dream and adding images by delineating that early first death of the West. This is Spotted Eagle's camp. This is his surrender camp. He had been starving to death in Canada because the last buffalo were killed, and he had to return home to surrender. And so this is a very somber scene in the winter, not far from the Yellowstone River near Billings, Montana, where I've spent many, many hours. I have called my work Photo Interventions in order to make it perfectly clear that these images are meant to convey a very different message from what the photographer really intended. The appearance of the camera on the frontier changed the face of the Western mythos forever. The painted views and the beautiful portraits by Carl Bodmer, George Catlin, Frederick Remington, Charlie Russell quickly became symbols of a past grandeur and romance, readily illustrating the noble savage as depicted in popular fiction and the standard versions of American history. The earliest photographic records of the civilizations of the Missouri and Columbia basins, often produced in the spirit of boosterish pride in scientific and industrial advancement, present us often unintentionally with a haunting and fragmented record of environmental and cultural devastation. Commercial photographers arrived just in time to capture the reduced circumstances, starvation, and squalor on the newly formed reservations of the Upper Missouri and the Northern Rockies. Only a few surviving photographs document the extermination of the bison and the hunters' subsequent struggles against the starvation. Instead, as if to marginalize the dying cultures, countless images survive that depict the arrival of the mining speculator, the soldier, the cowboy, the homesteader, the lumberjack, the dry goods merchant, and all that followed, to give us a thorough and close-up look at the noble, savage, free territory of the post-bison civilization. One of Deborah's more moving moments is, when the buffalo are gone, the prairie will die. Shots such as these were sold to tourists who were coming out to the West for the first time, and they would get off the train in Miles City, Montana, and buy a stereoscopic slide, and this one would read at the bottom of your frame, "Taking the Monster's Robe." This particular photograph here was taken by a brilliant man by the name of F.J. Haynes, who was an early photographer in Yellowstone Park, where the last free buffalo lived. That's a pile of Custer's horse's bones. So 2 years after the massacre, the battlefield had not yet been cleansed, and some of the local citizenry of Billings, Montana, were incensed, and they went up to the battlefield and they shoveled the bones into a pile and took a photograph of them and went back to town and said, "It's about time we took care of our dead." And of course, this is what the town looked like when they went back. This happens to be Last Chance Gulch, one of my favorite street names in all of the West, in Helena, Montana. Anyway, as the frontier disappeared, the real West burst upon the landscape like a poisonous mushroom after a forest fire. So over a period of 5 years, Deborah and I met occasionally, and we worked sporadically on the concept and nature of our book while we each pursued our own very busy and demanding schedules. When we finally had what we thought together, it was something that could be created and worked on, and we entered the machine age with this thing. We stepped out of the archives, and here's a picture of Don Farnsworth at Magnolia Editions printing the images, or working on an image that was later to be printed on this Japanese handmade Kozo fiber paper on his newest high-tech gizmo. And I couldn't even come up with a name for this thing. I asked him what it is called, and he gave me this name. It is a flatbed acrylic pigment inkjet printer. Don is a brilliant, very brilliant innovator, and developed a technique to induce the pigments to penetrate the highly absorbent paper and cause the image to appear on the reverse side in a ghostly fashion that I was trying to achieve. And now here he is just last week printing a print that I have that I'll end this show with. This is that image printer, and he's taped this piece of Kozo down onto this flatbed and is watching this gizmo robot rush back and forth and creating my image. I just am fascinated by these machines. They have names, but they're they're too technical for me. After the images were printed at Magnolia, we had to cure them. It was just under the skylights of my studio. We had allowed the ink to penetrate the sheet, but not to stop penetrating the sheet. And as time went on, the pigments began to crawl, and it started to look a little bit like lichen growing on a rock. The pigment crawls out into the paper fuzzes, the images fuzz, and right about the time they started to get really dreamlike, we would start hanging them up, and we could hang them up under my skylight, and under the skylight the natural UV would fuse it, and it would also stop that horrible smell of all of these pigments, because the pigments are embedded in an acrylic medium, and they have a kind of a funny chemical smell. After they've hung up for about a month in my studio, they cease to smell, and also to cease to change. My desire here is to get these images to reflect, really, the skin of Sacagawea's dreams, as if projected on a parchment scrim. They are hanging in another room on the wall, under some of those wanted posters that I began printing early on in my career. Amanda Degner and Bridget O'Malley. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm skipped. Whoop, went too fast. The text paper for the book was made at Twin Rocker. That there's a hefty gentleman is lifting a lot of weight for the Da Vinci paper. And here we have Amanda and Degner and Bridget O'Malley at Cave Paper, who made my smoked buffalo rawhide paper, a singularly tough sheet that expresses so definitively what I needed in order to cover this work. There's the beginning of the painting. So after the sheet is formed, then they paint it with pigment. With walnut dye, and eventually we had to hang the hides up to dry up in my studio because they too had suffered some modification. In fact, I asked Amanda and Bridget to maybe they could take them out to their smokehouse and have a little barbecue, and I wouldn't mind it if it smelled a little bit like real buckskin. One of the odors that I remember so incredibly in my life was when the Indian parades would go down the Higgins Avenue in my hometown, and I was once picked up and held by a gentleman in full buckskin regalia, and that odor is something that there is no place on earth that you find that odor except coming out of the trunks of these men and women who cherish these incredibly beautiful buckskins, but it has a particular odor that I wanted to. But luckily, the barbecue, didn't. The whole thing kind of fizzled out, and we managed to continue that. Like I say, hang the hides and clean them out. The organic quality of this work is beginning to take on a life of its own. The typeface that I used is a clumsy version of the historic fell types interpreted by a contemporary designer, Jonathan Hoefler, in a conscious attempt to reproduce the imperfect image that types left on paper when printed in the 18th century. And he says it retains a retrogressive old-style irregularity, which is exactly what I was hoping to do. wife. This is the call-out line, wife for dark nights died 4 days ago. The next line reads under there, she sits between Lewis and Clark, unable to choose which one of these men will save her. Throughout the entire process of the design and production of this work, Jonathan Gerken, technical digital wizard, printer, bookbinder at my studios, has been at the lead in consulting the engineering details on the typographic, aesthetic, and structural problems that I face. I just need to flip through this until we get to... yes. This is a production shot. The binding was inspired by field journals. We should go back. Field journals of the 18th century, with added decorative touches of Plains Indian beadcraft and small caliber cartridge cases, and it's seasoned with odors of gunpowder and wood smoke. The production of the cartridge cases was executed by Susan Filter and David Lance Goines early one morning at a gun range in southern Marin County. Throughout the entire process, I read that a little too soon. I skipped to the bottom of the page. Jonathan has been a great deal of help, solving the technical problems as they were arising. I'd like to leave you with one final image. This is the image from a nightmare of the other civilization. It's a composite that I dreamed up after the whole shebang was over. I thoroughly enjoyed this process, and now that I've introduced you to the concepts and techniques of this book, I invite you to handle the real thing at my table this afternoon. And I really want to thank Deborah for coming all the way down from Missoula to join me here tonight, or today, this morning.